Welcome to our Friday Five Live podcast hosted by Meg Foster. Meg has spent 20 years in higher education focused on student success initiatives and working in areas such as orientation, faculty development, online learning, student leadership, and first-year initiatives.
Well, welcome everybody. Happy Friday. This is our first Friday Five Live of 2025. I'm Meg Foster and your host. And we are so excited to have just a fantastic panel today as we wrap up this series, really talking about AI, its use in our higher education spaces, the heated discussions we're having around using its ethical use, creating policy, just all kinds of things. So we appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation with you all. Just as an important reminder, our guest, we would love for you all to interact with us via the chat. And I see LaVon has introduced herself. That's wonderful. Please feel free to throw into the chat where you're listening from today. And if you have questions as we move through our conversation, please do feel free to put those in the chat as well. I'll post our PowerPoint and a survey so you all have that. Also for your resources. I do want to just say a quick, you know, thank you so much for being here with us. You know, we're very conscious of the fact that this is a really stressful time in the state of California. And so we appreciate, you know, you all's time. We were supposed to have Heather Stewart with us from the College of Canyons, and she messaged this morning and said that just unfortunately, with their situation, she couldn't be with us today. So we're very aware that January, I was laughing with Tim, is 31,000 days long, not 31 days long. And it's definitely been a very long January for lots of us for lots of reasons. So welcome everyone. Love seeing you putting, you're introducing yourself in the chat there. Please feel free to do so. Do want to just highlight a couple of conversations we have coming up next week. We're kicking off a series on looking at best practices in dual enrollment, which I know is a very big topic across our country. Dual enrollment student growth is just expanding, and we're seeing a lot of neat initiatives come out of states like California. On Friday, the 31st, you know, it's funny how you plan things in 2024. I don't know if anybody else did this. You plan things in one year and you roll into a new year and you're like, well, that conversation shouldn't have been more perfectly timed. So next Friday on the 31st, hop in with us at 12 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific. And we are going to be talking about hope and inclusivity and navigating what has become an even more complex and complicated time for our work in diversity, equity, and inclusion. I mean, I just couldn't believe the timing for that one because I do feel like it's such an important conversation. And so we're looking forward to that next Friday. So lots of resources here around AI. Tim and Alex and Ben have all, I think, completed an AI micro-credential that Innovative Educators offers. And so we've got links, and I'll post this again in our chat. So if you're joining us from one of the community colleges in California or CSU Fullerton, know that those resources are available to you, but they're also available if you're in the 49 other states. And just as a brief reminder, this is a podcast and it's available on all of our podcasting channels. I would also encourage you, if you have a second, sign up for our Innovative Educators newsletter. I don't think we spam you. We send you good stuff. Every Monday, we send you the five hot topics in higher education for that week, links to important articles and things like that. So if you want to stay informed, those are some great, just I think I would call them professional development tidbits, you know, just a little snack you can quickly absorb. All right. So that's enough of our housekeeping details for the day. We are so thrilled to have with us, you know, just folks really spanning the California Community College system with us today to really talk through how they're using AI. And I couldn't have planned this better. You all were so gracious to heed the call. And we ended up with folks from kind of all over the world of higher education, right? And so I'm going to stop talking. And I think we'll just have We'll go Alex, Tim, Ben, and Kate. How does that sound? If you'll just introduce yourself, tell us where you're working and your role at your institution. And maybe if you just want to give us, I know Ben's doing some super cool stuff with AI that he shared. If you feel like I won't cover that in another question, feel free to put that in your introduction.
Awesome. Well, hey, everybody. I'm Dr. Alex Brocky. I'm a professor in academic technology at Bakersfield College in Bakersfield, California. We're a community college, and a lot of the work that I do is kind of runs a gamut. So I do a lot of faculty support, designing professional development opportunities for faculty. And then I also teach student-facing classes. So introduction to AI, introduction to Microsoft Office, and everything in between.
Hello, I am Tim Morehouse. I am an Associate Director of Guided Pathways at the Foundation for California Community Colleges. We are the auxiliary support for the California Community Colleges Chancellor's Office. We work with all 116 colleges across the statewide system to do equitable reforms to improve student outcomes based on the students' goals.
So, thank you, Tim. Ben.
There we go. My audio wasn't unmuting. So my name is Ben Kaup. I teach at Foothill College in Los Altos Hills in the Bay Area. I wear two hats actually on campus. As a teacher, I run a program, a transitional program that helps disabled young adults achieve success and independence in either mainstream classes or in the workforce. And my other hat is as the curricular chair of for or the faculty curricular chair for my college. So I get to see AI not just in my program, but also how my college as a whole is implementing it. And we just went public that we're creating an associate's degree in artificial intelligence, as well as a couple of certificates.
Wow, wow, wow. That seems very timely. And you're the faculty curricular chair, so I think you probably have some advice and recommendations for since you've had quite a view on that work. And Kate, last but not least.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining us today. Kate Mahler, I am Vice President of Student Services at Coastline College in Southern California.
Kate, just to be completely transparent, is gracious enough to be on our board and help advise innovative educators around our work and how we can support. And it was really their efforts that brought forth this whole idea around creating this kind of AI micro credential that we've offered to you all. So, you know, you all are clearly kind of early adapters, I think, adopters of AI, and wondering if, you know, completing some sort of professional development training around it, whether it's just been the micro credential that Innovative Educators offers or anything else, how has that kind of informed this work that you're doing? You know, is there any light bulb moments that kind of happened or moments of like big stop signs? I mean, I think all of that is very relevant. So, and feel free, just unmute, hop on, share. Alex is smiling and nodding.
Yeah. I think for me, the biggest thing that I learned was just foundational skills that I could use to get confident and start playing around with it more. One of my big light bulb moments was just thinking about prompting differently. I loved the suggestion that to give ChatGPT a task and then ask it to prompt me and say, what more information do you need from me to complete this task? So if I'm doing a one-page summary of a project that I'm working on, and that's been really helpful because it's helped me not only, you know, learn how to prompt better and better understand what information, what details I need to be giving to the various AI tools that I'm using, but it's also helped me kind of see prompting as a way to use AI as a thought partner, because a lot of times it would ask me questions that I hadn't necessarily considered about the project yet.
Oh, that's a really, I love that idea of using it as a thought partner. You know, I know in my previous work in higher ed, you know, some days I was like, listen, there's just no, I don't like have a file drawer full of answers. right? Like I wish I did, but I can't just open a drawer. So to use it, just to, what else should I be thinking about? What are other ways I could approach this? I really love that idea. Anybody else want to share with us any of their insights or
Yeah, I love
Ben?
the thought partner thing as well, but I have found that the micro-credential especially, it really opened my eyes to the fact that my interpretation and relationship with et cetera and AI, my interpretation of AI is very limited. Because A, as a resident of Silicon Valley who grew up running around the halls of Apple Computer in the 90s, I drank the Kool-Aid, and the micro-credential really allowed me to take a step back and learn about it in a slowed down, formulated, proper way that also showed me other people's positionality and where I may be going a little bit faster than I need to go. And so I found that really useful.
Such a great point, Ben. And I do feel like we're all called on to like sometimes, learn. I mean, and Alex, how brilliant to have somebody who actually like helps people with technology, like training and stuff. I feel like one of the big critiques I've heard is there's so much happening so quickly, and faculty and staff, but in particular faculty, don't have the time to invest in the training pieces of it. So would love, we need to dive into that a little deeper. Tim, Kate, anything you just kind of want to add? And it's fine to be like, nope, and we'll just jump to the next one.
I think it getting the credential was very timely for me, being a system-wide support with the Chancellor's Vision 2030. The future of learning is a big component of that, and so working with the colleges that I work with, having kind of a foundation to be able to have conversations on what does it look like with teaching? What does it look across like the student supports? How does this help administrators do their jobs? I think in particular, a lot of the colleges that I work with are small, and AI provides each of us as individuals the opportunity to, in a way, clone ourselves in some of the work. The small colleges have just as much work to do as the big colleges with less people. And so figuring out ways to use AI has been helpful for me to go into conversations. And I have very limited knowledge still, even with completing the credential, but it's given me lots of places to explore and lots of ways into the conversation.
I think you make such a good point. Like colleges, doesn't matter the size, we all have a large body of work to do. And I don't, I know I hear this across higher ed, right? We're all doing more with less. I mean, still struggling to staff up and things like that. Kate, always appreciate your insights because you had some particularly, I thought, really clever ideas when we've talked earlier about kind of what Tim is saying. Like, how do we streamline some of the work that we have to do? Using AI.
Yeah, happy to share some things that are happening here. And one of the things I'm seeing on a broader scale is a mindset change as folks either complete trainings on whether micro-credentials or any other trainings on how to use AI, and then they start to implement that knowledge and experiment in a variety of ways. There's an embracing. At first, people, I think a lot of us thought associated it with, okay, students are going to be cheating in the classroom with this and you can't catch it. That was like the go-to for most folks. But as folks try it, they learn more about it, they try it. I'm seeing just an exponential growth of ideas of how to implement it, how to utilize it. And so going to that point is, just yesterday, we had an all student services retreat, and one of our classified professionals, who's a whiz with Excel spreadsheets, she's now starting to learn about how with she's created these complex Excel sheets for a very kind of complicated department as far as the data that they need to track. and learning how to use AI to extract disaggregated data, look at patterns, look at themes. And one of the things I had shared with Meg was early on, as I started to learn about it more, and we have a couple of folks that just are running with it. There's just marvelous things they're doing. Was I needed to, my practical example would be, I needed to take two different manager positions that I need to combine as a job here at Coastline. And I thought, this is going to take me hours to do this and compare and write this new job description. And with someone teaching me how to, in this case, use ChatGPT, we were able to merge those job descriptions in a minute. And then I could fine tune that and submit it to our HR for them to take a look at it and say, can we make this a new position that works for the functions at Coastline? So the efficiencies, I'm more and more excited every day at what we can do to make lighten the workloads and refocus some of our time as some of the more manual or mundane tasks that have to be done, AI can assist with those.
Right. I love that example of how can we use this as a tool to be more efficient? Because I think about, you know, in your work and so much of our work, you know, the student facing, wouldn't it be wonderful to have more time to serve more students face to face, right? In my role. So Kate, I think you've kind of done a lovely job in segueing us to this next question, which is there anything specific that you've kind of, because of your knowledge or training, like I think people are always eager to hear these examples of, you know, Kate's taken these two job positions and what would have taken hours, merged them together, or being able to, you know, use AI to query. I know I've done that. I have this Excel spreadsheet. We've collected survey data. Share me themes, make a graph so I can visualize it. Like, and it's so exciting to see what would take me hours, just take minutes, but would love other examples from you all.
I've got two that I really have been very excited by how well they've worked. First of all, I work, as I mentioned, with neurodivergent students primarily, and so many studies have shown that there is absolutely zero correlation between, for example, autism and IQ, or negative or positive. The stereotypes in both directions are untrue. But a first-year neurodivergent autistic student has a 20% lower chance of continuing to the second year than a neurotypical student. It's not because of education, or it's not because of intelligence. It's not because of anything other than it's a language barrier. And what I teach my students to do is take instructions from their other professors and use ChatGPT to break down those instructions and communicate with ChatGPT about what the professor is trying to tell them to do, and rewrite those instructions in a translated way that they can comprehend. And that has helped so much. But on the flip side, I have 25 students taking 5 classes a quarter from me. Yay, quarter system. I think I'm pretty rare. But that means I'm grading about 120 assignments a week. And it doesn't matter if you're Superman, the 120th assignment is not going to get the same attention as the first one. But by putting my rubric and everything else into GPT, I can make sure that it removes my exhaustion, removes my bias, removes the fact that that student just annoyed me last week, removes all of that, and makes sure that every single student gets the same level and depth of feedback and is graded against the same criteria, because there's also a bias when working with my student population to give what some people are referring to as a pity pass. Basically, people look at my students and people look at my, I'm popular today, people look at my students and they think, I can't be the one that fails the disabled kid. And that's actually discriminatory. So again, by using GPT on the professor's side, it can help the professor to remove that bias as well. So huge fan.
So Ben, is that, sorry, with the grading, is that something integrated into your LMS or something you're doing outside of the LMS? Does that make sense?
I do it outside of my
Like,
LMS. And to
okay.
answer Michael in the chat, yes, I make sure that my students know. And I also let them know that I use the rubric and everything else to create sample assignments so that they can see what an A or a B work output will look like. But we're actually in our AI unit right now, so I'm being very transparent about it with them as well.
Wow, thanks for sharing that. And I'd be just blown away. I'm thinking about the neurodivergent students. I'm a very fortunate. I get a lot of them placed into my first year experience class. And if I could, to be able to say to them, look at how we can use this tool to break down your assignments in ways, then that's, you just blew my mind. I'm taking a lot of notes over here. So you're going to help a lot of students with that. Michael had one more question. Do you have a formal acceptable use of AI for students? We're still finalizing ours. That's such a great, curious if Ben, you've got one, or institutions are developing those.
We're writing it. Our academic senate is really fighting with that exact thing and the debate over, in one department it looks very different than in another department and how to cross that bridge. But we're getting there.
Yeah, we definitely feel that at our institution. Alex, Tim, any examples of how you're using this in your work? That it's sure. Go ahead, Tim.
I think a lot of the work that I've been doing across colleges has been helping colleges kind of see the work that they've done, and using various reports, California being a complex system, different programs have different reporting mechanisms. Oftentimes it's very challenging to go in and disaggregate data, to find themes. We've been doing that as Guided Pathways regional coordinators, kind of with the colleges that we work with directly. And we've been doing that year to year. We've just completed year five in the work that we've been doing. We haven't had the opportunity to synthesize across all 5 years for each college, because what we do is we take the previous years that we have kind of a summary and then kind of compare it to what the new full report is. Now, using AI, we can put in all of those kind of disparate reports and get a much broader picture of the work that's being done across the specific college. We're also, or I'm also now starting to do that, looking at regional data to see kind of what are different practices and themes that are common across colleges within the region that I serve. And then we can also see if there are particular themes that come up, like dual enrollment, for example. What are some of the highlights? What are some of the challenges that come out so that we can tailor support specifically and be able to do that to scale across the system versus just doing one-offs as it's being brought to us directly from the college. We can kind of take it from all of the disparate reports, get it into kind of one summative document using AI, and then take that to either the colleges or the chancellor's office or a particular program and say, does this look right? Does this look like some of the things that you're doing? And with the colleges that I've been working with, they're like, oh yeah, we didn't even realize that we had done that. And I think that also kind of a caveat to that is there's been a lot of turnover, especially at the administrative level. By being able to go that back and do this with reports, it's able to help bring new administrators up to speed that much more quickly.
Oh, wow. I mean, you're bringing up such the ability to take all of that data, to collapse it, to compare it across institutions, to roll all of that up to present. But then also to, I mean, Kate and our board talk often about the turnover in higher ed and how we're really losing people who have, vast knowledge, have been in places. And so then to be able to get somebody more quickly up to speed, not here are 5 years, 30 reports over the course of 5 years that you have to read, but here is a summative document that more quickly gets you on board. Wow, Tim, y'all are just blowing my mind here. Not gonna lie, because you're right, these are really complex systems. Now, Tim, just curiosity's sake, is there a specific AI tool that you're like, oh, we are finding XYZ to be particularly helpful in these efforts, or the system is really recommending using? I'm just curious.
There hasn't been a system recommendation per se. I've been trying out different ones just to see how I like the interface. So I've used ChatGPT has been the one that I've used the longest. And it seems the most accessible. I've started using Claude because I get a little more fidelity with some of the information that's coming out of that. And then I just started using Copilot. I can't tell you the success with that yet. I've really only been starting that since the first of the year.
Okay,
But those
well,
are the three that I've used, and there's not a system-wide recommendation.
Very interesting. Is there any system-wide guidance with regards to, because you talked about Claude and fidelity, and I know there's a lot of concern about data, what we're sharing, protecting all of that. So.
Those conversations exist. Just last year, the Board of Governors approved funding for a Digital Center for Innovation, Transformation, and Equity. It's housed at De Anza Foothill District, so in Bibb District. That's a statewide support for anybody that works within the system, and they're kind of leading the conversation and providing that space for folks to try on different technologies, including AI, but also to kind of have that marketplace of ideas to have conversations about the impacts of technology in the system.
Oh, I love that. Thanks for sharing, Tim. Alex, what about you?
Yeah, so one of the things that I've really wanted to try to focus on is just creating more opportunities for faculty and students to get together and talk about AI. So earlier on, I co-hosted a workshop, and it was for faculty and students, and we had breakout rooms where we created a learning pact. What does acceptable use look like in the classroom? And that was really helpful because it helped kind of demystify what some of the concerns, especially students, were feeling. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that one of the biggest concerns students had was about privacy and using AI tools. Last semester, I started for the first time the Introduction to AI course, and that's a non-credit course. It's 9 hours, it's over 2 weeks, it's super fast. And it's students and faculty. So last semester, I had both students and faculty taking the course. And it's been really really exciting to see students and faculty just kind of playing around with the different tools, thinking critically about it, building that baseline so that at the end of the course, they have a basic understanding of AI. They can evaluate AI-generated content, and then they can start playing around and they're creating AI-generated content. So it's been cool to see what comes out of those conversations.
That is really neat. I don't think I've ever been in an institution where we've done professional development that involves students and faculty in the same space at the same time. I think that would be super informative. What
Yeah,
it wouldn't go ahead, Alex.
and I mean, faculty love hearing from students. I think some of the most powerful professional development is when you can hear student voices, and just having that live in in the moment has been really, really cool. And AI produced a really great opportunity to do that because students and faculty alike were really hungry for more information about what this tool looked like in our context.
And how, I mean, I think, how important everything I'm reading is like, people who are hiring our college students want them to have a set, need them to have AI skills. So for you all to say, even if it's non-credit, look, we're offering, our graduates are coming out with this kind of skill set, I think is super, super powerful. Very interesting. Okay. So moving on to our next question. And you all are being awesome about putting lots of great stuff in the chat, and we will share all of these resources with our listeners today. So, any challenges? Maybe nothing came up, but anything that's kind of come up that you're like, I wish I had anticipated this, or at your institutions, I'm thinking about the importance of as we're trying to craft what our policy is going to look like, involving students. in that policy. I'm like Alex, I'm on the, we always need to include our students' voices in these kind of conversations. So anybody had any
challenges? I can jump in again. I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed in working with faculty and students has been just a fear of the new technology. You know, anytime we see a new technology in teaching and learning, we get a lot of fear. Even Plato's Socrates was scared of the advent of writing and what it would do to education. But I think that no matter what technology we're addressing, as long as we're focusing on those guiding principles of what, you know, what do we want our students to learn at the end of the class? And how do we think about, you know, building interactions and helping students engage with our content? We can really take that, move away from the fear and think about the opportunities that this new technology provides to not only just take a step back and reflect on our teaching and our teaching practices, but also think about ways in which we can leverage that technology to better support student learning.
Yeah, I think, Alex, you touched on something really important. I think that most people, when they think about AI, very often will fall into either the camp of it is this glorious thing that's going to save the world and change the world, which, yeah, but some people don't think it's going to change the world for better, or it's the enemy, the evil, every student's going to use it to cheat. And I think that neither is correct. I think that it's a tool, and just like if anybody has ever tried to pound in a nail with a screwdriver, yeah, you can do it, but it's better to use the right tool. But the cheating thing, you know, I'm not old enough to remember the debate with math teachers around letting calculators into the math classroom, but I know it happened. I know that every new technology has been feared as letting students cheat. And what I have found is that if you focus your energy on helping the students figure out that they're not in their educational environment just to get the grade and pass the class, but getting the students invested in the education, the energy spent there is much better than the energy spent installing software on your students' computers to make sure that their eyes are looking at the screen and all of this other countermeasures. An involved, engaged student understands that they shouldn't cheat rather than having to find countermeasures. But the other big accusation that we've gotten a lot of is the idea that AI could perpetuate racism or bias. And that one has a lot of truth to it. AI is trained by the past, and the past is not a pretty place. And I would argue my counter to that, before we can fight that, we have to be in the room. And if we just try to shut down and run away from AI, we aren't going to be in the room because this isn't going away. And AI, again, I go back to my students. My students speak a different language, even though it may be English. And many students, English language learners, or even students who speak a different vernacular, AI can mask that vernacular, mask that language barrier, mask things for long enough for those students to get in the door and get people listening to us, to them, us also, I'm one of them, and get people's respect so that we can educate people from the inside. That is a much more powerful way to do it. That rant could go on for a long time. I'll stop now.
No, but Ben, you bring up a really good point that has been, you know, made several times in past conversations, that we need to remember this is a tool, and it is a biased tool because of how it just inherently how it's designed. And I think you're smart. I mean, I am old enough to remember when a T3 calculator was going to bring down all of math, right? Because you could cheat using your T3 calculator. And so so I think those are all important things that you bring up. We're all still grappling with how, and it is here to stay. And I think that's one of the things I love about Jean Mandinek, who did our series for us on AI, is that she's very much like, this isn't going anywhere. So how are we shaping an educational environment that understands this as a tool? And to kind of piggyback on Ben, how are we creating assignments? She brings up a really good point that you can craft an assignment now using AI that really gets at a student's critical thinking skills, not the final product of a paper. I just cleaned out my childhood closet, and I can't believe this. I kept every paper I wrote in college. I was a history major. There were a lot of them, right? But that final product, while it does show some thought, doesn't show the critical thinking that went into the production of the paper. So some really interesting things you brought up here. So we've got about 10 minutes. Want to get at this kind of, I love a crystal ball question. It's just kind of my personality. So as you were involved, seeing the future of higher education, anything that, how do you see AI kind of playing into that? But then also, could you offer any insight? Because again, I keep coming back to this concern I'm hearing from faculty and staff that, they can't stay ahead of the curve, right? It's so overwhelming, the need to learn about AI and AI resources and tools, and everything's constantly changing. And how do I have time to do that and teach and help students? So what's your crystal ball predictions? But then maybe also if you have any insight into how to stay ahead of the curve, it'd be great.
I think one thing I'm really excited about is seeing AI and mobile design kind of merge a little bit more. Meg, we were talking before this officially started about how many students are using phones for learning now. A lot of my work really focuses on mobile design, both as a PI on an NSF grant looking at mobile design, but I also have a book, The Mobile Course Design Journey. Our students depend on that technology for learning. There's some weeks where I wouldn't be able to get groceries if I couldn't order them on my phone. I don't have time. So I think that when we pull AI and mobile design together, I think there's some really exciting ways we can create really engaging face-to-face classes and online classes so that we're having students evaluate AI-generated content together. I think that's going to be such an important skill for students to develop. So in a face-to-face class, I imagine students just pulling out their phones and using an AI tool to create case studies that their groups analyze together. Or online, students are in charge of coming up with their own discussion prompts using AI tools. And then they critique those discussion prompts, a way to maybe make those online discussions a little more engaging. So I think when we think about ways that we can leverage the mobile friendliness of AI tools to really prompt students to start evaluating AI generated content, I think we're going to, I'm really excited to see that.
It's really, I just sat through Quality Matters rubric training, and that engagement piece is so important. And I think there's so much more discussion around how do we create quality distance classes. So it'll be interesting to see this intersection here. Other thoughts?
Not quite answering your question, Meg, but it's tied to it. And it's, I mentioned how we had one of our classified professionals wanting to use AI to, with these Excel spreadsheets that she's created. One of the things that came out of that would helps me with student support services is helping folks understand that the investment in time of learning more about the possibilities of incorporating AI into their work. Another piece was then how do you share that information? And I liked some of the earlier comments about how do we share what we've learned, like from California across the 116 California community colleges. But one of the other ideas was for Coastline internally was some brief TED Talks on, okay, here's how I've learned it. And here, because I wanted to learn from, they're realizing they can learn so much from each other. And how, so me as a vice president, I need to help create those spaces and those here's the AI tools, how helping them learn that, but also then how are we sharing that collective information? So person's teaching the next person or a group of folks. So that's what I'm seeing the role on the support services for those operational efficiencies.
But Kate, you bring up such a good point that, you know, in your role, like carving out the space, right, sharing with your team, it's important that we learn how to use these resources. And I'm making space for that in your workload, because we are going to prioritize that. And I mean, when we'd all love to work with you, Kate, on your team. But, you know, I think that
we'll talk.
That's I think that's just so important that that giving that space for that professional development opportunity and acknowledging it versus just, well, here's something else we have to do, right? And let's throw it on the heap that you already have. I'm feeling overwhelmed. Anybody else? Tim?
Yeah, I see part of it is not necessarily being ahead of the curve, but how are you in the curve? If you're going to ride a wave, you don't want to ride on the crest of the wave. You want to be kind of in that tube. There's a sweet spot. And just do it where you're feeling comfortable, right? We're all coming in at different levels of understanding and accessibility. Try on the things that feel comfortable to you. And also not doing it alone. Having your peers or having someone just hey, I put this in and this is what came out. This was really cool, or this is really concerning, like so that you're able to kind of understand the technology in a different way. I think in terms of the role of AI evolving in higher education, I think in large part it's we're still in the early stages in California because it's political. I would say in California on the faculty side of things, that falls directly under faculty purview. So the chancellor's office doesn't get to say, administrators at each of the colleges don't get to say. We also have at least 117 ways that it's gonna be adapted, 116, because each college has local control within the system. And then the chancellor's office has their lens that they put on top of that as well. So a lot of those things are negotiated. Those go slowly, and I think that's part of why government was designed is so we don't get steamrolled by things within society, but we have autonomy within that as individuals, so we can try on those things, we can be in those conversations, we can shape what that looks like within our classroom, within our department, within the group of students that we're working with, the professionals that we're working with, to be able to grow that. I think the technology is always going to be evolving faster than we're able to keep up with, but it's figuring out how it's working to the benefit of the student outcomes, and centering students, centering equity, centering what those outcomes are really helps. And I think I agree with the conversation in terms of a design principle. Always have the people that it affects in the conversation in the room. So if it's affecting students, bring students into that conversation. If it's impacting faculty, have them so that you're not doing something for someone or doing something to someone, you're doing it with them.
With them, yeah. Such important points that you're bringing up. And I love your idea that, you know, rather than, because it is easy to feel overwhelmed by this, right? Like, it's like, how am I going to learn? AI is so vast, right? But what can I do in my space that I feel comfortable beginning the exploration? Because I do think this is one of those, once you begin to put your toe in the water, you kind of see the ripple, right? Like, oh, well, I can now understand how to use this over here and over here and over here, you know, and everything from Alex ordering groceries, right? What should I eat for dinner tonight? ChatGPT. I ask it, how should I celebrate my child's 18th birthday? It suggests a hot air balloon. I'm afraid we did not do that. But, you know, it is like from the silly, right, to the very practical, you really can see. And Tim, there were a lot of nodding of heads when you were like, and don't do this alone, right? Let's find somebody we can partner with in our organization. So it's, I think that makes it less overwhelming too. You can kind of kick around those ideas as you're learning them. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Any last thoughts as we wrap up? I always want to make sure we stay at time, and we do 45 minutes so folks can get up, rest, move their bodies before their next meeting in the afternoon. But I am so grateful for all of you for the vast knowledge that you've shared with us. I know you've made me think in some new ways. I'm excited about taking this. Ben, I'm going to email you. Sorry. And we can talk further about, I'm excited to pick your brain about neurodiverse students. And I see some future podcasting happening here, Alex. So, you know, I mean, I'm excited to continue these conversations. You know, just as a reminder to everybody, next Friday, 12 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific, join us as we continue the important work around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how we can continue to have those conversations in a very, let's just be frank, bleak environment at the moment. And we're going to keep doing that important work. So come join us. Always my goal for our Friday Five Live is that it sparks some thoughts, but that it's also a place that we can come to for some rest and renewal too. So yeah, so thank you all so much for your time on this Friday. Hope everybody has a great weekend and that there's time for renewal in your weekend. So thank you all.
Friday Five Live is brought to you by Innovative Educators. Innovative Educators offers 6 online services for your onboarding support and training needs. Visit us at innovativeeducators.org to see how we can support your student success initiatives.